your triggers are actually your teachers. They're trying to show you where you're out of alignment. And once we understand that and we take those steps to set boundary or whatever that is, the triggers start to fall away. So I think it's the first thing is make a list of triggers.
Hi friends, I'm Jillian, the host of Teach Me How to Adult, a podcast on all the things you never learned growing up. Between landing your dream job, crushing your love life, learning to invest, mastering your mindset, and figuring out how to be happy along the way, there's a lot to navigate. I've learned firsthand that there's more than one way to adult, and it's not always linear. So consider this show my love letter to taking the unconventional route, creating new milestones, and carving out your own version of success. You're right where you should be. So join me every week as I call in the experts for unfiltered, game-changing advice on how we can all live our best lives. Adulting isn't easy, but we got you. Hi guys, I hope you're doing great this week. To be completely honest, I usually avoid talking about today's topic, which is food and nutrition and our relationship with eating, because I'm just so fearful of perpetuating any sort of diet culture or like restrictive narratives. And it just feels like there's a lot of landmines here to navigate when it comes to food and diet culture. But I really feel that our relationship with food is so fucking important to both our physical and our mental health. And it's something I don't want to ignore out of fear of saying the wrong thing or getting it wrong, because I don't know anyone who hasn't struggled with food at some point in their lives, either in terms of like emotionally navigating their relationship with food or physically figuring out how to eat to make their body feel better and how to navigate, you know, food intolerances and all of these things. And I know I've spent a lot of my adult life trying to deprogram diet culture and deal with the feelings of guilt around certain foods and just reprogramming this idea of morality that we assign on how people eat. And I've also really spent the last few years trying to figure out how to use food to make me physically feel good. Like instead of a restrictive approach, using it as an additive approach. How can I nourish myself? What can I introduce into my meals to make me feel better, to add more nutrient-rich foods to each meal? How can I optimize myself with what I consume? And also, I've been really exploring how food is impacting my hormone imbalances and learning that really the order and the combination in which I eat food can really help me with my glucose spikes and with all of like the hormonal reactions that we have from food. So it's been a real journey and we're gonna dive into it today. So we're gonna talk about emotional eating, the repercussions of yo-yo dieting, food triggers, and the huge impact that hormones have over our food and the way that food impacts our hormones and our blood sugar levels. It's such a cycle and I am definitely not the expert. So I am joined today by expert Amber Romaniak. Amber is an emotional eating, digestive, and hormone expert with 10 years of experience helping women create body confidence, intuition, and optimal health through mindset healing, self-care, and overcoming self-sabotage with food. Her podcast, the No Sugar Coating Podcast, has over 1 million downloads, and you can check out her almost 500 episodes of amazing information on eating and hormones and mindset anywhere you get your podcasts. Amber overcame her own emotional eating journey after gaining and losing more than 1,000 pounds combined, spending over $50,000 on binge foods, and spending 5 years balancing her hormones and digestion. She is really, really vulnerable and open about her journey with binge eating and emotional eating and how much it affected her life and everything that she did to overcome it. She's lived this and gotten to the other side, and now she helps others achieve body freedom so they can have true confidence and health. Teach us how to overcome emotional eating and manage our hormones, Amber. Amber, thank you so much for being here today. I really appreciate everything you're putting out into the world to help people move through whatever season they're in with food and dieting and emotional eating and hormones and all of these things that are not talked about enough.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to be here.
I'd love to start by talking about emotional eating. I think there's this general idea of emotional eating being like something that we do when we're really depressed or we're really heartbroken and we get, you know, all of the ice cream and kind of like binge it on the couch. But I feel like it can also be, you know, triggered by boredom and loneliness and worry. So I'd love to know what the most common emotional food triggers are that you see amongst your clients.
Yeah, this is so good. I'm glad you're bringing this up right away because, yeah, it's not just the depression or getting broken up with. Those are huge triggers, and there's usually so many actual sub-triggers there. But what I see most commonly are things like overwhelm because the schedule's overbooked. People are putting themselves last. Boredom, for sure, is a very common trigger. Loneliness is a common trigger. A lot of people don't feel comfortable sitting with themselves and their emotions, and they don't feel good enough or connected to themselves. So unless they have people around, they're wanting to numb. Mm. Fatigue is a huge trigger because when we're tired, we have increased appetite levels, and we're also in more of a I don't care mentality because I'm tired. Right. So that's a very, very common one as well. I find the scale to be a very common emotional and binge eating trigger because if you know, women are tying their worth up with the number on the scale and they don't like what they see, then they go, oh, screw it. Who cares? It didn't work anyway. The diet didn't work. The workouts this week didn't do anything. Screw it. I'm going to just go eat whatever I want.
It's like the all or nothing.
So, oof. Yeah. And so it triggers the all or nothing mentality for sure. The all or nothing mentality is a huge trigger. And so are diets, because of course, diets are very restrictive. They really enable the perfection mentality. Otherwise, I'm not going to gain the results. Mm. And so then when someone doesn't, you know, attain the perfection, which doesn't exist anywhere on the diet or the eating style, then they are getting hard on themselves, and then they're going and rebelling essentially and eating all the things they weren't allowing themselves to have on the diet. And then it just fuels the pendulum swing of going back and forth between emotional eating, weight gain, panic, diet, failing on diet, you know, going around. So, and then I think with certain foods like refined sugar, MSG, like really addictive foods that produce massive dopamine highs, that like pleasure moment that we have, that like numbing moment, are a huge trigger because the more of them we eat, the more we crave them, the more addicted to them we can become.
Yeah.
Because of the way they impact the brain chemistry and give us that big high.
Yeah.
So once some people start, they can't stop. Right. And it's not you. It's the way the food is really impacting your brain, your mood, the dopamine, and all of those things.
So is it the McDonald's fries that were like studied and they saw that it had the same addictive properties in terms of like the salt and fat combo as like video gaming? Like it had the same responses in the brain, which is wild because we assign morals and villainize people who are, you know, struggling with food, and it's like this this has addictive properties.
Yeah, that's what happens when the French fries in North America have 17 ingredients. That's the first big red flag, right?
Yeah. There should be just potatoes.
Yeah, exactly. And so the quality of the food has a significant impact. And like you said, we villainize the person and judge them, but it is not. Yeah. It's so deep. It's so deep. It's not the person. We fall into these habits and we're not taught how to deal with them or get out of them, really. Yeah. Right?
Yeah. And the food industry can be really like predatory too. Like it's, you know, there's a reason like food that's bad for you is so cheap and made the way it is and addictive, and it's really, really hard to navigate. I also find that comparison is this new thing that I've really noticed in terms of triggering emotional eating. I think it's like the scrolling online and on social and seeing a life that you don't have and you wish you did, or a body that you don't have and you wish you did. And then it almost, I think, causes people to give up, and they're just doom scrolling, watching everyone, you know, live their best highlight reel. And then eating to comfort themselves. And that's a really hard thing, because especially if you spend a lot of time alone, it's like you and your phone.
Yeah, 100%. And I think, of course, as we know, one of the biggest problems is it's the highlight reel, or it's all edited and photoshopped and with AI now. You could literally be looking at an account that isn't even a real person. Oh my God, and this is where like really learning how to like use our discernment and set boundaries with technology and social media is so important. Because otherwise the comparison does hit really hard, and that does trigger more self-sabotage with food.
Yeah.
And so setting boundaries, or like really starting to spend less time on your phone and more time like healing and getting to know yourself, I think is so important.
Yeah, right? 100%. Okay, so we've talked about the setting boundaries with the phone, but do you have any other tools that we can use to combat these emotional urges when they come up that are like fueling, you know, maybe eating that's not beneficial to us?
Yeah. So I think the best place is to start, because here's the thing, binge eating, emotional eating, food addiction are very complex. I went through it all myself, and binging and purging. And, you know, I think it's to know if you've been struggling with this for years or decades and you haven't dealt with it or fully overcome it yet, my first number one is try and get support if you can, because there's so many intricacies of this that you don't know about that's not your fault, but having that help is what so many need. Mm-hmm. But I think things we can start with, number one, is starting to make a list of your triggers, because if you're not aware of what's triggering you, you're never going to be able to understand how to deal with it,
yeah,
or, you know, what kind of things are going to help you work through whatever triggers going on. Your triggers are actually your teachers. And they're trying to show you where you're out of alignment. And once we understand that and we take those steps to set boundary or whatever that is, the triggers start to fall away. So I think it's the first thing is make a list of triggers and be checking in with it on a daily basis, even if you're not triggered, to have awareness. We need to build awareness. This is what we lack when we start this journey, whether it's physical symptoms or behaviors, we don't have awareness. The second thing is, before you just go to food, ask yourself, is this physical hunger? And do you even know what physical hunger feels like? A stomach growl, right? A blood sugar crash, you get hangry, you get lightheaded, you get a little moody. You notice you haven't eaten in a few hours, versus is this emotional hunger? Mm. Which emotional hunger is any reason for eating other than physical nourishment. So
that's a really good distinction.
To the list of triggers.
Yeah. Okay. That's helpful, because I'm so hyper aware of, like, I never want to tell people or have people believe that they should, like, ignore their hunger, or if you're mm-hmm. feeling hungry, well, you just ate, so you shouldn't eat. Like, if you actually have hunger cues, I think it's a very diet culture-y thing to be like, I don't know, maybe like mm-hmm. have a bit more water and see what happens. If you're mm-hmm. actually hungry, you should eat. But
yes,
not knowing the difference between those hunger cues and just the emotional reliance on food, I think that's where things can get really confusing. So that's helpful to know that we can actually do a scan and figure out what's going on in my body. Is this physical hunger or is this a vice?
Yeah. And I think that the other thing to really be aware of is, am I sitting down and eating mindfully? Am I paying attention to what I'm eating? Am I actually aware of what full feels like? Because when we're flying by the seat of our pants all the time and running around and we're not paying attention and we're not, you know, sitting and actually eating and gaining clarity of what full feels like, you'll finish your meal, you feel bloated, right? And then you go, oh, that wasn't enough. Like, I want more, because you're not emotionally or physically satiated.
Yeah.
Versus when you're sitting and you slow down and you eat mindfully and you get rid of all the distractions, interaction with others is fine. When you chew thoroughly and, you know, you help assist in better digestion and you actually are present with the food and you're more emotionally, physically satiated, you're far less likely to want to go and dig through the cupboard and try and find something else. So that's like my third thing, is starting to build that mindful eating practice.
It is a really good shift. I mean, I think the perfect example, if people don't like fully grasp what that difference is, it's like if you're watching Netflix and you're eating, you're probably not paying attention to how much you're eating or how you're feeling. Like, you're not checking in with your body. You're not actually seeing how much or how quickly you consumed, because it becomes like a passive activity. When eating a meal really like deserves our full attention and presence. So that's really helpful.
Yeah. And that TV, that like TV technology is a huge emotional eating trigger.
Yeah. Also, I'm wondering how refined sugar and refined carbs, why is it that we can eat so many refined carbs and then feel hungrier after? Like, what happens in the body that makes eating sugar and kind of the carbs that aren't rich in fiber, I can eat so much in volume and then be really hungry right after?
Yeah, so there's a few reasons for this. The first thing is, refined sugar is 10 times more addictive than cocaine. So we get a massive dopamine drug-like high, and we want to keep that high going. So we have it. It's like you forget about everything else going on around you. It's like the glazy eyes kick in, and all I can think about in this moment is this joy I'm feeling by eating this food, which is followed quite quickly by like a crash and the guilt and the shame and all of that. So we keep chasing and eating it to keep that up. Mm. The other thing with the refined sugar and the refined carbohydrates is that they break down extremely fast. So any kind of sugars or refined carbs will break down in less than a half an hour. So you're going to have a massive blood sugar spike, and then you're going to have a massive blood sugar crash. And so one of the reasons we feel like we can keep eating them is because they break down so fast that the body doesn't have a blood sugar regulation. And instead it's like energy crash, blood sugar spike crash. And then we have this maybe temporary, maybe for 20 minutes or so feeling satiated, but then the hunger comes back. And that's also because things like fat and protein, which we want to make sure we're having with our whole foods carbohydrates, break down in 3 to 6 hours. And so if you're not pairing proteins and fats with your meals, or you're not having ample protein and fat, say after an emotional eating episode, the blood sugar stays really irregular, which really increases the appetite levels. And often because the blood sugar is so skewed, we have heightened cravings for sugar and refined carbohydrates, and we want to keep eating them as well.
Right.
And then on top of that, you throw in, you know, how these kinds of behaviors can create hormone imbalances like adrenal issues. Mm-hmm. And that just skews our blood sugar and increases our appetite even more. And the more processed sugars and refined carbohydrates we have, the more it messes with the cortisol, the more it increases the appetite levels even more. And something a lot of people don't realize is after we emotionally eat or binge, especially if we have large quantities of these processed foods, there's two things that happens. Number one, your body wants to keep the fix going. Otherwise, your body starts to go through a drug-like withdrawal, and that's really miserable. Yeah. And so, of course, it seems easier to just keep eating the food, gaining temporary relief from the craving, but you just feel awful all the time.
Yeah.
The second thing is that when we overeat, the body is going, oh, there must be a famine coming because there is this stockpile happening. So we're going to increase the appetite level so that you can eat up to 40% more with your next meal or the next day, because let's get as much in as we can in case this famine or this, you know, lack of food lasts for a week or more so you can survive. Mm. But there's food everywhere. There's garbage everywhere. And we don't realize any of that. And so I find the evening of a binge, especially going to the next day, we can really struggle with the cravings, brain fog, the low energy, the guilt, and this increased appetite level, which will make us more vulnerable to potentially go through it again the next day and then the next day, or keep having those heightened cravings for those refined sugars and carbohydrates.
Wow. It's so interesting how much the body is just doing to evolutionarily protect us.
Yeah.
But if we're not like moderating that, then it works against us. But it really actually... is kind of a relief to hear why we function that way, because I think we can put a lot of judgment on ourselves of like, okay, well, I ate way too much yesterday, like an amount that really didn't feel good to me. Today, I really want to get myself back on track. And then you're more hungry. And it's really hard to actually eat the amount that feels good for you after you've overeaten. And now I understand why. So it removes some of that like moral judgment. And now we can understand my body is doing this because for evolutionary reasons, and I am aware of that, and I can just choose to maybe consume more nutrient rich foods today and then try to get back into the habit that feels good to me.
Yeah.
And I think also just understanding a big thing that I went through, because I was trying to balance my hormones and I like really villainized carbs, and I was trying to cut out carbs a few years ago completely,
right,
which was terrible because I wasn't getting any fiber. It was so bad, but I was just taking pieces of information and trying to see what stuck. And now
right.
I really see like carbs are not the villain, and it's so bad to just completely cut out all carbs. It's just fiber rich, like complex carbs are important. They're so important. No naked carbs. And it's really just like the sugar and the refined carbs that can be really problematic and just fuck with our systems.
Exactly. And we do need good quality carbohydrates. I did the same thing. I was trying to heal my gut, and I'm like, I read this thing before I knew anything that I did.
Yeah.
And I cut out like all fruit and all starchy.
Yeah. I was like, I can't eat this apple. There's sugar in it. It's like, oh my God,
right?
The apple is so good for you.
Yeah, exactly. And what I didn't know is that I had severe adrenal fatigue. And if you have severe adrenal fatigue, cutting carbs makes everything worse.
Mm.
We need that quick energy from those carbohydrates to help with mood, brain function, and that just having a quicker burst of energy with those slower energy foods like the proteins and fats.
Yeah.
And when we take those out, it actually makes the blood sugar worse, and it makes adrenal fatigue worse, and then it can start to negatively impact your thyroid. We can deplete our estrogen and progesterone levels, our sex hormones, and so many other things. All these crazes with keto and carnivore and all this stuff, like, it doesn't help us, especially if we're dealing with emotional eating and hormone imbalances.
Yeah.
We need those good carbs.
100%. Let's talk about how food affects our mood for a moment, because I think it's like a cycle of like your mood might affect what you eat, and then what you eat is affecting your mood. So what's the science behind that of how our energy and our emotions are affected by what we're putting into our bodies?
Yeah. So what I've really come to notice is that if we have a void, a lack of self-love, we will crave more sugars and processed carbohydrates because we have sweetness missing in our lives emotionally. We have a lack of joy or love in our lives, and we don't love ourselves. And so oftentimes we'll have a physical craving come up for sugar or processed carbohydrates, and we'll think, well, not that we even maybe realize there's a lack of joy or love in life, but we'll like unconsciously eat those foods to try and like course correct this emotional void that we have. So part of it is starting to understand and be aware of Do I feel unworthy about myself, my body? Where's my self-worth at? Because if it's low and I feel lonely and I've been broken up with, or I've been hurt, or I've had to have a big life change that's been really emotional, there's probably some of this going on that is making you crave these foods and go into the emotional eating behavior. So there's that aspect of it. And then, of course, a lot of people have low dopamine and serotonin because the food's garbage. We have so much inflammation in our body, and inflammation suppresses dopamine and serotonin. These are the mood-boosting neurotransmitters that regulate your mood and make you feel happier or just more content. When we have had to take antibiotics and have poor gut bacteria and candida and yeast, this suppresses our mood. Actually, I just saw something and he was saying that even after one round of antibiotics, you have a 20% increase in anxiety, depression, and your dopamine levels plummet like significantly. If you have had to have two rounds, it's double that.
Oh my God, wow.
Yeah. And so, and they're never telling you after you take antibiotics how to course correct it ever. So think of how many people have had to take multiple rounds of antibiotics their entire life and have all these things going on, and they have no idea that that's part of it. So there's the gut flora, the inflammation.
Wow. I just had to take so many rounds of antibiotics for a brutal UTI over the holidays.
Oh, no.
And I was so depressed in January. And I was like, well, it's, you know, I live in Canada, it's seasonal depression, but also maybe it was some of the fallout of being on multiple doses of antibiotics. Yeah. So that's really interesting.
Yeah. And then again, the quality of the food, the more inflammatory food we're eating, like sugar, like GMO soy and corn, like MSG, aspartame, right? Anything really processed. The more inflammation in the body, the more it suppresses, like I said, those serotonin and dopamine levels. So that's why we'll have a high and like it feels so good while we're having it, but then things plummet with our mood because of all the inflammation and how it's feeding the unhealthy gut bacteria. And it just crushes those levels. And so I think what's so important for us to understand is that, you know, part of it's the quality of food, but part of it is the stress. So the more stressed you are, the more overbooked you are, the more you're chasing the number on the scale and you're unhappy with your body, all of this stress fuels a cortisol stress response, and that will inflame the body more, and that will suppress the mood. Hmm. When we don't have enough time to take care of ourselves, we feel spread too thin, we feel more irritable and moody. So part of a big block that is more behavioral is that people aren't prioritizing their needs and their health because they're people pleasers. They've been taught they have to take care of everyone else, which is so backwards. You need to be able to take care of yourself. It's your health. And so what ends up happening is we get into this behavior and mindset of, I don't have time. All I have time for, I have 2 minutes right now and I need a break.
Yeah.
So I have time to eat. I have time to numb, distract, self-sabotage, soothe with food.
Yeah.
Right. But that just keeps fueling all of these things that I've just been talking about. So those to me are the biggest things that impact the mood. But it's not just the food. It's like the behaviors.
Yeah.
It's the inflammation. Like it, there's so many layers.
Yeah. And that dip of like low energy after you eat something that's not, you know, not making you feel great, and that's causing the inflammation and the chain reaction. It's really hard to feel positive and happy when you're exhausted. So all of those slumps that we get afterwards, automatically, if my energy is low, I'm going to have trouble feeling good about life and feeling happy.
Yeah. Yeah, 100%. And then usually, like most women that I work with are emotionally eating or binging in the evening, and then it messes with their sleep. And the worse your sleep is, well, guess what? Same thing. Your dopamine and serotonin are lower, and then that really impacts your mood.
Yeah. Okay, let's talk more about hormones, because I'm just, the more I learn about our hormones, it's insane. Our entire like beings are so dictated by our hormones. It's wild. So can you explain more about how hormones can impact our appetite and our blood sugar, and what kind of hormonal imbalances we should, or even just spikes we should be looking out for if we're having a lot of cravings?
So the first thing is, actually, if you don't have a hunger signal, that is a sign that you may have a thyroid imbalance. Hmm. So a lot of people think, oh, I'm not hungry, I'm just not going to eat. And that actually makes everything worse, because not eating slows your metabolism down more, makes your body think that you're in a famine, so you have to store everything else you're going to eat that day as fat, even if it's good food, okay? And this really messes with your thyroid itself. So if we're skipping meals because we're not hungry, metabolism and thyroid are very connected. And the more we deny ourselves of eating, we're not eating enough, that really inhibits thyroid function. And then eventually the thyroid can end up going underactive or hypothyroid, in which you have like hair loss, eyebrow thinning, cold hands and feet, easy weight gain, struggles to lose, no appetite, irregular cycles, things like that. Right. So I see that very commonly and then get met with resistance when I'm like, I don't suggest skipping breakfast because it's messing with your metabolism, your thyroid, and it's skewing your blood sugar and setting you up for later day overeating, emotional eating, or binge eating, because your body gets to the point where she's like, I don't have enough. Like, I need to surge these, what is called ghrelin, the hunger hormone that makes you hungry, in hopes that you'll eat a lot of nutrient-rich food. But often when we get to that point where we're like, I am so ravenous, like, what's the first thing I can find?
Yeah.
We're usually not reaching for the most nourishing foods. We reach for all the processed junk food or whatever we can grab quick on the way home.
Yeah.
And then that just increases the appetite levels even more and makes it easier for us to overeat because it's empty calorie. It's not satiating.
Is that recommendation to not do like intermittent fasting or not skip breakfast, is that specific to thyroid issues, or would you say across the board? Because I have seen so many studies about diabetes and insulin resistance and how intermittent fasting can help kind of regulate insulin.
I don't suggest fasting to anybody who's struggling with binge eating, emotional eating, yeah, any kind of emotional relationship with food. You need to get your cortisol test, because if you've got a cortisol issue, fasting is the worst thing you can do. Most people have low blood sugar with cortisol issues, and fasting is the worst thing you can do.
Okay.
So unless you're in the picture of balanced health, you have a healthy relationship with food, and you have no issues with any of the things I'm talking about, maybe you're one of the 10% of the population that could fast with no issues. Mm-hmm. But otherwise, you're usually doing more damage than good. And this is where, with all due respect to science and studies, where all of that still misses the mark, because otherwise North America wouldn't be so sick, is that it's not taking the individualized approach to what is going on specifically with you,
yeah,
and your relationship with food and your stress levels and your hormone health, right? That's the miss with all of this, is it's way too vague.
Yeah.
The new book that I want to see written is like, let's encourage and educate people on how to take a more individualized approach,
yeah,
right?
I tend to not trust anything that's like a blanket prescription for everyone.
I don't,
because I'm like,
no,
but we're,
it doesn't
all
work,
completely different and have completely different needs emotionally and physically. This is interesting, because I'm wondering, I tend to skip breakfast and I'm not hungry in the mornings, and then I do find that in the evenings I'm way more hungry than I want to be. Mm-hmm. So I wonder, like, what, first of all, why do we get hungry, do you think, at certain times of day for different people? Like, some people are wake up really hungry. Some people don't wake up hungry. Some people are hungry in the evening. Some people are like, no, I have no appetite in the evening. Is there any like science behind why that happens? And am I doing this to myself?
To me, what it's really about is if you're not having a regular hunger signal through the day and it's not kicking up and igniting within a half an hour of waking, there's imbalances going on in the body. Ideally, we should be hungry within 30 minutes of waking up or less.
Yeah.
That is a sign of great metabolism.
Okay.
Great thyroid health.
Shit.
If that's not happening, likely there is stuff going on that is suppressing metabolism, because again, we've been taught, oh, you're not hungry, don't eat. No. If you're not hungry, we need to investigate what's going on with your blood sugar. What's going on with your ghrelin, which is the hunger hormone that makes you hungry? It's being suppressed.
Yeah.
What's going on with your thyroid? And so if you skip breakfast, you're going to continue to not feel hungry. What's going to wake that hunger hormone back up in the morning is to start to eat breakfast.
Mm.
And it's to start with something small. Like, I have so many clients that this happens to, and I used to be in the same boat, but it made my thyroid worse. It made my overeating in the evening worse.
Yeah, I think it's doing
that
for me.
Yeah. And so what I started to realize is I need to start eating in the morning, and it started to wake that hunger signal back up. And I'm like, oh, wow. After some time, I'm hungry again in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
Ideally, we should have a hunger signal kick up about 2.5 to 3 hours, every 3 hours. If we have good blood sugar, if we have good hormone health, if we're always hungry, blood sugar, cortisol, candida, like gut flora issues, stress, right? That will keep us hungry all the time. Or if we're not eating enough proteins and fats with our meals,
yeah,
then we'll often just be hungry all the time because the blood sugar can't regulate. If you're not eating because you're not hungry in the morning and then you're really hungry at night, this is what I was just talking about, the body being like, we need more energy. We need more nutrition. So then the body increases the appetite levels in hopes that you'll eat a lot of nutrient-dense food to compensate for the morning where nothing was eaten.
Yeah.
But instead, we get triggered to binge or emotionally eat or overeat, and we don't eat the things that the body is hoping for because we don't know how to listen to our bodies, or we're not attuned, or the urge comes on so fast that we just grab the first thing that we see. So this is where, to me, one of the most important focuses, aside from diets, fasting, get all that out of the way, is to focus on blood sugar regulation, which means eating regularly through the day. Start to get to know your hunger signals and what full feels like, because we do produce leptin. It's the hunger hormone that makes us full.
Yeah.
And that, for a lot of people, they don't produce enough of because their hormones are off. And just the same when we are emotionally eating and overeating and we're tired, because a lot of people in these behaviors, let's face it, you're tired, you're exhausted. Yeah. Like, I went through the same thing. And so we produce more ghrelin, which makes us hungry, and less leptin, which makes us full. And we feel like a hollow leg, like you could keep eating.
Yeah. It's like that gaunt feeling where you just like, you're not, even though you physically feel full, you're like, but I'm still hungry. Like, there's like a hollowness. Yeah. That's the perfect word to describe it.
Yes. But like we were talking about earlier, all those empty carbs and the fast foods and the MSGs and all these ingredients that literally like give you a dopamine high and increase your appetite levels. Like MSG, monosodium glutamate, is put in food to increase your appetite levels so that you overeat.
Oh, that's so right? fucked up.
Think about Lay's potato chips. Think about Pringles. Once you pop, you can't stop. You can't just have one. Do you think that they just thought of those little sayings out of nothing?
No. Yeah, their marketing is literally telling us what they're doing.
Yeah, it's deep though. So to simplify, it's like start even having something small for breakfast and you start your metabolism back up, right? Yeah. And then you're going to notice the later day increased hunger is going to start to settle.
Right. Yeah. It's so fascinating how connected your mental health state is with how you eat as well, because I recently interviewed an amazing anxiety expert, Lauren Cook, and she talks a lot about the gut and anxiety. And I was saying how I'm never hungry early in the morning. Like if I wake up at like 10, I can eat. But if I wake up at 7, I'm like, I am not eating for hours. Like my stomach is not settled and not feeling good. And she's like, that's an anxiety problem. Like this is anxiety. This is an imbalance in the gut. Like this is all connected, because you should be able to feel hungry and eat at 7 in the morning. So everything is so connected. And when we heal our mental health, we can really heal our relationship with food and our physical health and our gut and all of these things.
Yeah. And one thing to note on the morning and the anxiety is one of the most common hormone imbalances that fuels anxiety is high or low cortisol, that adrenal fatigue or adrenal burnout, because the more cortisol is a stress hormone, the more it's flooding through your body, the higher the likelihood you have of anxiety.
Yeah.
And so I would highly encourage you and anyone else that has anxiety to go and get all your hormones tested, get your cortisol tested, your thyroid tested, and start eating regularly through the day, because it's going to reduce your stress response, which is going to reduce the amount of anxiety that you're feeling.
Okay. So we've talked about cortisol levels, and I think everyone's probably pretty clear on that, and thyroid. And what about adrenal fatigue? I don't know much about it. Could you kind of explain how that affects our, you know, how we eat and how we eat affects adrenal fatigue?
Yeah. So cortisol issues is the adrenal fatigue. So if your cortisol is too high, then that's adrenal fatigue. If your cortisol is far too low, then you're in adrenal burnout. But what ends up happening, because this is a very important question, is when we have adrenal fatigue or adrenal burnout, we're often exhausted, fatigued, we have afternoon energy lulls, we have trouble falling asleep, abdominal weight gain, we feel brain fogged, we have low sex drive, and we have increased cravings for sugar.
Oh, so on both ends of the spectrum.
Refined salt.
If it's overactive and underactive, it's interesting. It's kind of the same feelings.
Yeah, and then we have increased appetite levels with a cortisol adrenal issue. So this makes it harder, because it's like, what happens is, because your body's so depleted, you're burning through minerals more quickly, you're burning through, right, everything faster, and you're more deficient. And like I said earlier, when we have an adrenal issue, we have a blood sugar issue. So the blood sugar often gets low. And so here is where it increases the cravings. And then we have increased appetite levels, because when you're tired, like I said earlier, you produce more ghrelin, which is the hunger hormone that makes you hungry. But if you're skipping breakfast, it suppresses the metabolism, which stresses out the adrenals even more and fuels the anxiety. So when we skip the meals and we fast and all the stuff, we're actually making the hormone imbalances worse, and we're heightening the amount of anxiety that we have.
Okay. And so we can just get blood tests and get a lot of answers on this, like fasting blood tests and all of these different, like, how do we find out what the state of our thyroid and cortisol and hormones are?
Yeah. So you can try going to your doctor and seeing if they will do the testing. I will tell you though, good luck, because about 70% of my clients got refused, or they met them with resistance. Go and ask for cortisol tests, thyroid tests. But if they will not do them for you, then it's like, okay, do you want to try getting a different doctor, or do you want to ideally take a more holistic approach? Because the problem with even a doctor getting the results back, unless they have a more open mind, the ranges are way too big, are like 70 years old and are not specific for females. So right. You know your body, you know if something's off, you trust that, yeah. And you keep advocating and get people to advocate for you.
Yeah.
So I do testing with all of my clients because I was tired of not getting the answers and hearing about all the symptoms and things that are going on. Every single woman I've ever worked with, including myself, has had an adrenal issue.
Yeah.
It is very, unfortunately, much of an epidemic, just like thyroid issues, and they go unchecked. Keep digging until you get the answers and the relief from your symptoms. That's like the biggest thing.
Yeah, it requires a lot of self-advocacy in the healthcare system, which is exhausting, but like there's no better use of your time. And I'm saying this to myself because when I'm met with resistance, I very easily give up. But it's like, I know when there's something wrong. I know I shouldn't be as exhausted as I am. I know I have hormonal imbalances and PCOS and all of these things that I'm trying to solve. And we just have to kind of find the right team to really help investigate and get answers and monitor over time, because your levels could fall into a quote unquote normal scale, but maybe 6 months or year over year, there's a big change. And that's indicative of, okay, there shouldn't be this significant of a change. So if we're mapping this against the norms, you're fine, but against your norms, something's not fine.
Well said. And I think it's important to monitor after we've overcome an imbalance and get everything tested once a year and just make sure it's still good, because we can have different circumstances come up out of our control that can completely throw something off again. But at least you know what to look at, you know what it feels like, you can take the steps to course correct, right?
Could you also talk a bit about how our cycles and hormonal shifts throughout the month can affect cravings and appetites? I think this is something most women feel and would like anecdotally be like, oh yeah, like that happens to me. But I find it's such a relief to have it normalized of like, this is happening and there is a reason.
Oh my gosh. Is there ever? So the week before our period, and I know everyone has like a different length of cycle, right? But when we get into phase four of our cycle, which usually is about a week out, this is where we are having a peak and a really big spike of progesterone, of estrogen. Ideally, that's what should be happening anyway, again, depending on if your hormones are out of whack, in this luteal phase. And so our metabolism does increase, therefore our appetite is going to increase. And so this can be a very vulnerable time for women to emotionally eat, to overeat, to feel a loss of control with food, because that is actually happening in the body.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you're already an emotional or binge eater and you already have underlying hormone issues and mood stuff and all this other stuff going on, it's going to be heightened and amplified during that last 7 or so days before your cycle, that luteal phase.
Right.
And so this is where it's so important to really go, okay, like in that last week when I'm more vulnerable with food, I'm going to really make sure I have more protein and fat to keep my blood sugar more regulated. I'm going to add in an extra snack that's really nourishing for me because I know I'm going to be more hungry. My body needs a little bit more nourishment and that it's okay. Mm. And if you're terrified to do that because you're afraid of gaining weight or you're afraid of losing control of food or your body, there is deep emotional work to do there. But we're going to have that increase and that spike in those hormones to help us go into, of course, the menstruation. So I think it's really important to be aware of that and to also, in the interim, be working on getting your hormones tested and regulated, be working on regulating your mood and your dopamine and serotonin levels via nature, sunshine, self-care practices, meditation, getting better sleep, hydration. Like even before you get your hormones tested, make sure you're drinking enough water, 2+ liters a day. Make sure you're getting enough sleep. Most people need at least 8 hours a night and to be asleep before 11 p.m. So we can start with these things where we don't even need anything outside of our household. And if those are not, you know, in sync, then we start working on those things first and you're going to start to see an improvement.
And what are the effects of yo-yo dieting on our bodies? Because I mean, especially for millennials who grew up with just yo-yo dieting in our faces, every new diet on every magazine cover and every celebrity talking about what diet they're on. Like we were really raised in such a toxic diet culture, and you know, it's still so pervasive, and I'd love to hear your take on it and what you feel is like the best approach forward, if it's like intuitive eating or how do we just like tap into eating in a way that's healthy for us without becoming like obsessive about it.
Yeah, I hear you. So I think like you just said, because we've been so programmed, we have to undo that programming. that's in the subconscious mind. So acknowledge food fears, acknowledge your diet and food rules, write them down and be aware of what is leading you, because it's hard to intuitively eat or have a healthy relationship with food if you've got so much programming from all these diets and diet culture. Yo-yo dieting is horrible and so hard on the body. I obviously used to do it all the time when I was going between binging and trying to fix it all with a diet.
Yeah.
Diets just amplify more restriction, more malnutrition, more food fears, food rules, and then we can't attain it because perfection doesn't exist, and then we rebel and go way the other way. So I actually don't suggest intuitive eating unless you have a healthy relationship with food, because otherwise, when you're not in tune and your body is giving you skewed cravings, you're going to be like, oh, I'm craving a donut, so I guess I need a donut because I'm intuitive eating. That's not how it works. I often find we have skewed cravings. We shouldn't crave donuts. We shouldn't crave candy. We shouldn't crave refined foods. You know, your body is getting into alignment physically and emotionally when you don't crave anything processed, but maybe now you crave a big juicy steak or an apple or like a smoothie with certain fruits or something in it. I think there's something I'm deficient in and I'm craving this whole food, and you have it and then your craving resolves, versus with processed cravings, we want them, we eat them, we just want more of them.
Yeah.
So intuitive eating doesn't work when you're emotionally eating or binging or in diets.
Okay.
Because you're not actually attuned to your body. It takes healing those things to build that attunement that then intuitive eating can work for at that point.
So step one, you got to heal the mindset around eating. And then
Yes. If
you achieve that, then tuning into your body is easier, because if you are craving meat, it's literally because there's something maybe with your iron, or you know, you're going to get your period, or there's a reason that you're craving things. And then also, 100%. Even if I think if you're healed, like I have to hope and believe that if you're like, I really want a sweet treat right now, this is what I want for me, that you can just have one and it can be a lovely thing and not some horrible thing you lord over yourself and then spiral because of.
Yeah. And you bring up a good point. You know, your relationship with food is healed when you enjoy that piece of cake or you enjoy that mindful indulgence and you're so neutral and detached emotionally. So you enjoy it, because we need balance. It's like, my ideal mindful relationship with food is you desire to nourish your body for your health, vitality, physical nourishment, right? And there's also room for mindful indulgence, which is no triggers, no cravings. It's like, hey, you know what? Today, I really just want to enjoy some nice chocolate or enjoy this thing. And you sit, you eat it mindfully, you enjoy every moment of it, and then you move on.
Yeah.
There's no guilt, shame, F it, I ate that, fucking, I'm going to go eat that thing. Like that is all gone.
Yeah.
And that totally exists because I live it, and so do all the women that I work with that heal it as well. So it does exist and we can get there, but there is some healing and stuff to do to get from point A to point B.
And I definitely know it exists. I've had seasons where I really am in a really great place and I'm detached from any sort of judgment, punishment, or any sort of feeling when I indulge in something that is meaningful to me and that I enjoy. I mean, food is part of our culture. It's part of our memories. Yes. I grew up with my grandma baking amazing baked goods, and I want to enjoy them and like not hate myself for them. And I've hit many points where that has been true. And then I also can reflect back on the points where every bite I have comes with judgment and comes with feeling bad about myself and comes with, well, what will I do later? What should I eat later to make up for this? But I know that it's possible and I've felt what it feels like, and I think it's a wonderful goal to get there.
Yeah. And it's anyone can do it. It's just, are you willing to do the work?
I'd also love to pick your brain on digestion. I know that's something you have a lot of expertise in as well, and I'm wondering if you have any tips of how we can generally improve our digestion, especially if we're someone who might have more bloating than normal. I mean, I think we need to like normalize that you will eat food and your stomach will expand. That is, you know, supposed to happen to a degree. But if we're having like uncomfortable bloating or bloating from certain foods or like heartburn, indigestion, all of these things, what would you recommend?
Yeah. So it really depends on the symptoms because they all mean different things. So if someone has a heartburn and an acid reflux issue, I think it's important to, you know, investigate, is your stomach acid low? Because if it is, it's easy to course correct naturally. And you don't need to go on all these medications and like not have the issue resolved for the rest of your life. Bloating, you're right. So yeah, we're going to eat, we're going to have a little bit of expansion. But what bloating is where things really get puffy and stick out. Some people have discomfort, cramping, pain, right? But others, it's just like things are really sticking out. Bloating is the sign that the intestinal lining is inflamed and is swelling up and puffing up. And so in these kinds of cases, there's a few things to question. First thing, was I stressed when I ate? Because if I was, it's just easier to make myself bloated. Mm-hmm. So some deep breaths before eating can help. Did I eat really fast and on the run, or did I slow down and eat mindfully? Because if I didn't, that's going to make me more bloated more easily. Number three, am I feeling a lot of really negative emotional, you know, anger, frustration, irritation when I eat? Because if I am, my digestion shut off and I'm not going to break down the food properly, and that's going to contribute to bloating more easily. Did you just binge last night? So your digestion is going to be sensitive the next day. You're going to potentially feel more bloating, more gas, more discomfort because your system's so inflamed from overdoing it, mm-hmm. right? Did you drink too much water with your meals? Ideally, we want to drink the majority of our liquids away from meals because otherwise we dilute our stomach acid, which is very important for protein breakdown. And if we dilute that acid, it can make us more bloated and uncomfortable. So to me, the rules of thumb to start with are things like, what are your symptoms? What are you feeling? If you have a symptom kick up after you eat, can you take a few moments ago, was I stressed? What kind of emotional state was I in? Did I chew the food thoroughly? Was I distracted? Did I drink a lot of water with my meals? And then from there, for each person, it's kind of like depending on the responses to those questions, you get to start going, okay, like I'm going to work on water, more water away from meals, just small sips. I'm going to start really focusing on that mindful eating and presence and chewing thoroughly because that's important for digestion. One thing people don't realize from an emotional standpoint is we, especially if you're an emotional eater, we will suppress and store so much negative emotion in the gut that will flare up different digestive symptoms. So if you feel a lot of anger, frustration, irritation, guilt, shame, fear, worry, self-loathing, we will store all that in the gut. And a great book you can read is You Can Heal Your Life by Louise L. Hay. She talks about the emotional, metaphysical, you know, signs of our physical symptoms and the connections of them. And she really does a great job explaining of how our emotional state and suppressed emotions fuel physical symptoms. So we never want to rule that out. So if you've tried to eat clean and take enzymes and probiotics and all these things and it's not working, get honest with yourself. Have you dealt with the emotional stuff or is it all getting shoved down? And the last thing is if we're binging emotionally eating in an emotional relationship with food, that's going to amplify gut issues tenfold. Yeah. There's so much stress on the system. So again, just doing a bunch of digestive protocols is not going to help heal your gut if you're still binging and emotionally eating. Mm. So work on that while supporting your digestive system and you'll see a big shift.
If you have generally good digestion and you're not necessarily looking for like an ongoing solution, but there's just like an instance where you're looking for a bit of digestive support, do you think things like ginger and like peppermint teas and spearmint and like chromium extract, do these things help?
Oh, for sure, because they're very anti-inflammatory and soothing for digestion. So I love the ginger, the peppermint, the turmeric.
Yeah.
I love marshmallow root for bowel health. Huh. Collagen and bone broth are so soothing for the intestinal lining. So I think there's a lot of really great, simple little things that we can add in that mm-hmm. will just assist in better digestion. And ideally, we want to get it from food, teas, and spices first. But the problem here in North America is everything has been so depleted that oftentimes we do need to additionally supplement on top of that for a period of time.
Yeah.
Until we see a better relief.
One last question that we'd love to ask all of our guests is, what is one thing that you wish you had learned in school?
All of this? I mean, to me, I think it's really self-worth. It's not taught. I feel like going through like middle school and high school is one of the most vulnerable like experiences. We're not taught confidence. We're not taught self-worth. We're not taught how to take care of ourselves, our mental, physical, emotional health. I wish that they taught that because it would be a game changer for everybody. And I think the world would be a lot more of a settled place if people knew how to tend to their mental and physical health.
Oh, that's beautifully said. I could not agree more. And here we are. We're helping. We're teaching it right now. So thank you so much.
Yes.
Truly, thank you for sharing your wisdom with us today. And please tell everybody where they can follow you and find you and how they can engage with your services.
Yeah. And thank you for having this podcast so we can have these conversations because it's so important. So the best place is the website. It's amberapproved.ca. There I have a free emotional eating quiz. If you're wondering, if you're struggling, you can take that. I also offer a free 30-minute complimentary consultation if you want to connect and talk more about all these things we're talking about today and where you're stuck and struggling and why a different approach may be exactly what you need to get you where you want to go. And then as well, the podcast is called the No Sugar Coating Podcast. It's available on all podcast apps as well as the website. And you can find me. I've been doing a lot of vlogging on YouTube lately. So you can come there if you want. It's my name, Amber Romaniak, and Instagram, same thing.
Amazing. Thank you so much. I hope this helps a lot of people heal. There you have it, friends. Thanks for listening and make sure you're following along on Instagram at Teach Me How to Adult Media and on TikTok at Teach Me How to Adult. If you like what you heard today, it would mean so much if you would subscribe and leave a comment or a rating. It really helps us grow the show. And if something in this episode really resonated, text it to your friends or screenshot it and share it on social. Wherever you are in your adulting journey, just remember you're not alone. My DMs are always open and I would love to hear from you. So hit me up with any topics or guests that you would like to hear about. See you next time. Bye!